back on the farm.
Well, come on in and set a spell, neighbors. Here's that lovable First Lady of the Ozarks, May Kennedy McCord, ready to chat with you about this, that, and the other in Ozark folklore and traditions, and just generally speaking to help brighten up your day. Boy, on this bleak November day, May, I hope you can really cheer it up. Good morning, May.
Thank you, Fred. And it's going to take a lot to cheer this day up, honestly. One of these sorry-looking days, but beautiful sun trying to break in there through the clouds. Did you notice it, Fred? Well, anyway, here was a cute little joke I got when I arrived here this morning among my mail from a little girl, Linda Jones. Route 2 Branson, 10 years old, she said, and in grade 5. She said, she sends me a riddle. She says, what would you do if your dog was losing his tail? She says, I would go to the retail store. Well, Linda, that's the place to go. That's a good place. Your dog's losing his tail, you go to the retail store. Linda Jones, that's cute. Well, anyway, time marches on, doesn't it? Soon it'll be Christmas. It rushes right at you about this time of year. And nobody's ever ready for it. I never saw anybody ever was. I knew one woman in my whole life who was always ready for Christmas. She began making gifts, lovely crochet work and handmade things. And also she began buying gifts, which she was to give as presents the next Christmas, and she began the day after this Christmas. She said she always made it a rule to go to town and buy at least one gift. It was, if it was no more than a toy for some child of her family or her acquaintance, the next day after Christmas. And she made these things along slowly during the year, beautiful things. She put them all away carefully, and when Christmas came, she was all ready. Smart woman. That's a wonderful thing to do, but how few there are that do it. Oh, you know, you wait and you race around at the last minute, panting like a locomotive, hunting some 98-cent bottle of toilet water, or some sort of murderous colored necktie, or some sort of buzzsaw or gadget for the kids to make a noise with, and you wrap them at the last stroke of the clock, and then you cook and bake and burn everything up and answer the phone 50 times a day. Well, as the little boy said, hallelujah. We used to have a little boy down home, and he'd say, hallelujah. Don't know where he got that byword. What a life. Wouldn't life be wonderful anyway if we did everything on time and with poise and ease and relaxation? I know it'd make my whole existence over if I would just catch up with things and do them on time. I'm going to make some high-sounding vows this coming New Year's Day. I told Betty last night, I said, you just wait till New Year's Day and just watch me at all the vows I'm going to make. I break them the next day, I guess. Just think, pretty soon the old world will be born anew on New Year's Day. And wouldn't it be a wonderful thing if it could be born anew with every vestige of the possibility of war washed from it, like a clean new page? Last week, or at least some days ago, on November the 11th, you know, that's what we used to call Armistice Day. And what is it? What, I've forgotten what it is they call it now. I couldn't think of that word last night to save my life. They've got another simple word. Well, anyway, I let it go by and neglected to say anything about it because I completely forgot it. Many things were on my mind about that time, and I was rushed to death. My heart is always with the brave boys who fought for this land that I am enjoying right now and am able to have it for my home. I wonder if we were really worth fighting and dying for. I wonder if I'm worth it. I know I'm not. That's the thing that comes to me often. Were we worth fighting and dying for? You know, I recall so many things, for I was going back and forth on the train between here and St. Louis during the last war. And I was up there near that huge army camp, Jefferson Barracks, near St. Louis. And why can't I? Let me see. Yeah, Jefferson Barracks, that's right. Anyway, I was on radio up there, and I came home every weekend of the whole 2.5 years. Home Friday and back Sunday. The trains were something one could never forget, simply packed to the doors, and often even women sitting outside between the cars on their grips or sitting on anything they could, often holding little babies, strictly against the rules of the railroad, but they had to sit somewhere. I have ridden home when there were 22 coaches in the train, and literally jammed with soldiers. The soldiers tried to give what seats they could to the women, but often they were sick themselves home from the hospitals. So people sat right down in the aisles on the floor. The trainmen had a terrible time making their way through the cars. Well, we would leave out of St. Louis on the Texas Flyer at 5:30 p.m. And of course, most everyone had supper on board in the dining cars. The strict rule was that beginning at 6, the soldiers went to the two dining cars first and ate before anyone else could go, which was right, of course. They gave them their meal first, whether some of the snobs liked it or not. I recall this incident so clearly, and I'll never forget it. The soldier, the MPs, you know, the military police, those great big soldiers they'd have, they used to head the line and come bringing the other soldiers through to go back to the dining cars. One time they brought through, one night I remember, a troop of Negro soldiers to go into dinner. Quite often there was a colored troop of nice-looking young men. Well, a big, fat, overfed, richly dressed hunk of a man in our car. As soon as the Negro soldiers were out the door, he got up cursing and simply shouted to all the rest of our car, well, you know about what he said, the so-and-sos, well, you know how vile it was. He said, they can go in and eat, but we sit here, even the women, and wait. He says, what kind of a government have we got? I'd like to take this whole thing to pieces with my bare hands, he said. And he went on, and some way the military police either heard it as the door was yet open out onto the platform between the cars, or someone else told the military police, and here came back two big MPs. And one walked right up to his seat and stuck his fist right up under that chap's nose, and he said, now listen, Mr. White Liver, those are Uncle Sam's men going to fight and die for you, and they're doing it every minute of the day and night to save this country so you can set your big fat hams on it and live off of the honey of the land. And so what are you going to do about it, he said. He stuck his fist further into the man's face, and the other big MP stepped up beside him. He said, if you want to take this country apart with your bare hands and this whole thing, right here is a good place to start. And the man sat down as meek as Moses, and believe me, I never heard such an applause and hand clapping in my life as every human being in that car gave. Some of the passengers just yelled. It did them good. And it wasn't long until that man got up and sneaked into the smoking car where he wouldn't have to face the men, women, and children in our car who had seen him show off. You know, we had plenty of just such heels as that during that war. But we had a great deal more wonderful, loyal, earnest, prayerful, helpful people, thank heaven, than we did that kind of people. But I'll never forget that little sideshow. Now I want to read today, even if I am late, in honor of the boys who gave their lives. That poem by Wilfred Peterson of New York State, The Unknown Soldier Walks Again. This poem went around the country, beautiful thing. Our unknown soldier, you know, he sleeps in Arlington in the most beautiful tomb you can ever imagine, up near Washington, Arlington, Virginia. And today a soldier walks in front of it with his gun, straight and reverent, back and forth, back and forth. And after a while another takes his place, back and forth, and all day that goes on, and all through the long hours of the night, never ceasing, back and forth goes a soldier in front of that tomb. And I guess it'll go on as long as time lasts. I often wonder about it. It's a funny thing. As long as time lasts, I guess. It's a strange thing and a wonderful thing. I'm glad I got to see it. And so here's the poem. I am the unknown soldier, a voice that's heard around the whole world. I died choking from poison gas in no man's land. I was blown to bits by a screaming shell. I fell to earth in a plain of flaming death. I was riddled with machine gun bullets as we charged a burning town. I died 10 million deaths, for I am the spirit of all those who died. I am the unknown soldier buried here. I am a poet who left his finest songs unsung. I am an artist who left his masterpieces unpainted. I am a scientist who might have discovered a cure for cancer. I am a minister who would have inspired a new reformation. I am a statesman who would have led my people out of confusion. I am an inventor who would have created a new world of miracles. I am an educator who would have developed great ideals. I am all the dead who would have climbed the heights. I am all the dead who would have served mankind. I was crucified upon the cross of war. I am the unknown soldier buried here. I am all the unknown soldiers. I speak for all the millions of the dead. I point out the folly and the futility of war. War sends cities toppling into ruins. War leaves fields unplowed and fills them with wooden crosses. War leaves homes in ruins and widows and orphans starving. War fills hospitals with armless, legless, sightless men. War piles up a mountain of debt on the backs of people. War breaks human hearts and leaves them empty and forlorn. War makes the Prince of Peace look down and weep. I am the unknown soldier. I speak for all the sons of those who died. We gave our lives. We asked that our sons be spared. Teach them that war is mud and blood, stark horror and living hell. Teach them to build, not to destroy. Teach them to save and serve, and not to kill. Erase from off the earth the scourge of war. Bring peace to a troubled world. I am the unknown soldier. Goodbye, dear friends, and I'll see you next Saturday, the Lord willing, the creek don't rise. I surely will.